We are glad to present your speaker, Don Blackwell.
Deacons, qualifications of deacons. And as we do this, as we go through the qualifications, I want you to be thinking in your mind about men who meet these qualifications. You know, the fact that we have deacons is a good thing because it indicates that activity is going on. Because deacons are workers. Deacons are servants. Being a deacon is not just a title that you wear. Being a deacon is not just a reward. Being a deacon is not a popularity contest. A man is not made a deacon because he has lots of money or he has a good sense of humor or because he's one of the good old boys. A man is made a deacon because he meets certain qualifications laid out in the Bible and because he possesses the skills to perform a particular work that needs to be done in the local congregation. And some of the works that deacons do are not necessarily prestigious works. Some of them are not glamorous jobs. In fact, some of them are very menial tasks. But the fact that a congregation has deacons and needs additional deacons is a great indicator because churches that are dead don't need deacons. All right, here's the first point this morning. I want to talk about what is a deacon. In Philippians chapter 1 and verse 1, the Bible says that the church at Philippi had saints. And of course, saints are merely Christians. The term saints and Christian are synonymous terms. But they had saints and they had bishops and they had deacons. Now, first, let's make sure we understand what this term bishop means. The Greek word here for bishop means overseer. And that's why in Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, you find it used that way. Paul, in talking to the elders at Miletus, says to them, "Take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over which the Holy Ghost hath made you." Now listen to this. Overseers. The elders have been made overseers. Now the word overseers here is the same Greek word that is used in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 1 and the same word used in 1 Timothy chapter 3 talking about elders. Bishop, a bishop is an overseer. It's the same thing, the same Greek word. And so the congregation there had elders and it had deacons. Now the Greek word for deacons is diakonos. It is actually a transliterated word. It's not a translated word, but a transliterated word. And what that means is they took each of the Greek letters, they took the word, the letter delta, and they gave it the English equivalent, and that being D. And they went through the word and they did this, and they transliterated the word diakonos. Now, what's interesting about the word diakonos is it is used in the Bible with reference to a lot of different people. And it's not always talking about deacons as you typically think about them. For example, in Romans chapter 13 and verse 4, you find the word diakonos translated as minister. But in that context, it's not even talking about a member of the church. It's talking about one of the civil authorities. It says the man is a minister of God. Now, what's being described there is a man who is a servant. He works for the government. And in this case, it is the civil government is telling us that this has a right to exist. God ordained the government, and the person who is working for the government is a deacon. He is a servant of God. That's interesting, isn't it? It's the same word here, a servant. In Romans chapter 15 and verse 8, you'll find this. Now, you ready for this one? The Lord Jesus Christ is described in that text as a diakonos. Now, of course, it is translated not as deacon, but it's translated as minister. But it's the same word, diakonos. In Romans chapter 16 and verse 1, Phoebe, our sister in Christ, is called a diakonos. That is, she is a servant of the church. Now, that's very interesting. It's the same Greek word that you find in the text that we're using this morning in 1 Timothy chapter 3. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 5, Paul and Apollos are referred to as diakonos. That is, they are servants or ministers of the church. Now, let's put all this together, because this could be confusing. How is it that Jesus and a woman can be referred to as deacons? How is it that a person who's not even a member of the Lord's church can be referred to as a deacon? How is that possible? And here's the solution to this. The word diakonos is used in more than one way. In fact, it's used in two different ways in the Bible. It is used in the official sense, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 10, the office of a deacon. And it's used sometimes in a generic sense, simply meaning a servant, a minister, someone who is working for the Lord in some authorized way. What we're talking about today is not the generic sense, but we are talking about the office of a deacon. And if a person is in the office of a deacon, there are certain specific qualifications that he must meet. Now, here's point number two. What a deacon is not. We talked about what a deacon is. Let's talk about what a deacon is not. First, a deacon is not an overseer. A deacon is not the shepherd of the church. A deacon is not a pastor of the church. He's not a bishop of the church. The word bishop, like I mentioned a minute ago, refers to those who are in charge, the overseers, and that references elders, Acts 20:28. It's the same concept in 1 Peter 5:1-6, where it describes the elders there as those who oversee the church. But in 1 Timothy 3, where you have the qualifications of elders and deacons, it's two different lists. The elders are described in 1 Timothy 3 as those who must rule well the church. But not so with the deacons, because deacons are not the overseers of the church. Now, you know, sometimes in various religions, they have seen fit to set up a board of deacons, and the deacons will oversee that church. But that's without biblical authority. The word deacon is not the same as the word elder. It's not the same as the word bishop. It's not the same as the word presbyter. The word deacon is a servant. It means a minister. All right? Number one, a deacon's not an overseer. Number two, a deacon is not a junior elder. Now, I don't know if you've ever thought about this before, but sometimes people think of it that way. But that's not the way it is. Sometimes people have the idea that a man becomes a deacon and he's working his way up and eventually he'll be promoted to an elder. That's not what the Bible teaches. You know, the fact of the matter is, you've got two different sets of qualifications for elders and deacons. And a man might be a deacon and he might remain a deacon until he's old and dies. Furthermore, there might be a man who is made an elder never having served as a deacon. And that's all right. There are two different roles. There is no more correlation between a deacon and an elder than there is between a preacher and an elder. Just because a man is a deacon doesn't necessarily mean that one day he will be an elder. But a deacon has a very important role to play in the church. And it's a role that's separate and apart from that of the elder. He's not a junior elder. Number three, a deacon cannot be a woman. Now, I don't think this used to be a problem, but in more recent years, probably in the last 30 years or so, because of the women's liberation movement, this has become a problem. And you know, we've got to work all the time to try to keep the world out of the church. But in reference to women, a lot of churches, and this has become a pressing matter. Can a woman be an elder? Can a woman be a deacon? And the answer, of course, is no, because in both lists of qualifications in 1 Timothy 3, the elders and the deacons must be the husband of one wife. Now, sometimes people will come on this word diakonos and they'll say, well, you know, Phoebe is described as a diakonos and she's a woman, and so there you go, you've got it. There's a woman as a deacon. But again, we talked about the fact there are two different senses in which this word is used. And in our text where the qualifications of deacons are listed for the office of a deacon in 1 Timothy chapter 3, the person in order to be qualified must be the husband of one wife. All right, next point. I want to look at the qualifications of a deacon. Let's read them together. I want you to go to 1 Timothy chapter 3, and let's begin in verse number 8, and we're going to go through the qualifications of a deacon. There are 10 qualifications listed here. 1 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 8. Likewise, must the deacons be grave, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy of filthy lucre, holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. And let these also first be proved, and let them use the office of a deacon, being found blameless. Even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their houses well. For they that have used the office of a deacon well purchase to themselves a good degree and great boldness in the faith which is in Christ Jesus. All right, here's number one. The first qualification from verse number 8 says a deacon must be grave. Now, that doesn't mean that a man who is a deacon has to be serious all the time. It doesn't mean that he can't have a sense of humor. We've got deacons here now that have good senses of humor. But what this means is that he is serious about serious things. It means that he really loves the church. He really loves the souls of men. And he knows how to be serious about those things. You know, Matthew 13:45 says that the kingdom of heaven is likened to a merchant man who was seeking goodly pearls. And when he had found a pearl of great price, he went out and he sold all that he had and he bought it. This is a parable about a man who recognized the value of this pearl. And when he found it, he got very serious about it. And he sold everything that he had and he bought it because it was important to him. And a man who is qualified to be a deacon is serious about the church. It's not a light-hearted thing to him. Faithfulness to the Lord is not a light subject to him. He's grave. He knows how to be serious about serious things. Number two, the text says he cannot be double-tongued. Now, this is pretty straightforward, really. The Greek word here literally means to tell a story twice in two different ways. In other words, a man who's qualified to be a deacon has to be a man who always tells the truth. You can count on this man to shoot straight. He is always going to tell you the truth. He is not double-tongued. Number three, the text says he's not given to much wine. Now, sometimes people look at this and they'll say, well, you know, a deacon is not to be given to much wine, but an elder, verse 3, can't drink any wine. And so a deacon can be a social drinker. He can drink at least some as long as he doesn't overdo it. That is nonsense. Now, I don't want to get into a social drinking sermon this morning, but I want to point out several things here. First, everybody, at least anyone who believes the Bible, agrees that drunkenness is wrong. And if a person is going to hold this position that the deacon can drink some and be a social drinker, he has to deny degrees of drunkenness. He would have to believe that a deacon could drink a certain number of drinks and not be drunken to that extent, which I believe contradicts both the biblical and the scientific definition of drunkenness. I would also ask this question. If the Bible said that deacons cannot be addicted to heroin, would he then conclude that it would be okay to use heroin recreationally, so long as he wasn't addicted to it? That's not a logical consequence. You know, Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 7 says, "Be not overmuch wicked." Do we conclude from that passage then that it's okay to be a little bit wicked? It says not to be too much wicked, and so it must be all right to be a little bit wicked. That's not what that means. James chapter 1 and verse 21 says, "Therefore lay aside all filthiness and overflowing of wickedness." Does that mean that it would be okay to have a little bit of wickedness so long as it's not overflowing? You can have your cup full of wickedness as long as it's not overflowing with wickedness. We know better than that. The point is, when you see a prohibition of a big thing, that doesn't mean that you have license to do a little thing. I think it's also significant here that a man who drinks moderately or who drinks socially is going to have a problem with verse 10 where the text says that he must be blameless. Vine's Expository Dictionary of the New Testament says about the word blameless that it implies not merely an acquittal, but the absence of even a charge or accusation against this person. And if a man is a person who drinks, it's going to hurt his reputation. There are going to be accusations. People are going to say, well, you know, this man drinks. That's going to be one of the first things that's brought up, and it's going to disqualify him from being a deacon. This is not teaching that a deacon can be a social drinker. Number four, a fourth qualification of a man who's qualified to be a deacon is that he cannot be greedy of filthy lucre. Now, the King James says filthy lucre. The term means ill-gotten gain. The New King James says that he's not greedy for money. And the principle here is that a man who's qualified to be a deacon can't be a covetous man. He is not consumed with his business and his money and his finances that he can't focus on God. And it has to be a person who's honest with his money. He has integrity with reference to money. You would trust this man with your money. There's not a doubt in your mind about this man's integrity. And he would not cheat you in a business deal if he had the chance, no matter how much money he could make. He wouldn't do it. He's not covetous. He's not greedy. Number five, from verse 9, it says he's a man who is holding the mystery of the faith in a pure conscience. Now, this phrase confuses people a little bit when he talks about the mystery of the faith. Now, it sounds here like we're talking about something mysterious or something magic or something like that. That's not what he's talking about. The word mystery here means something that was unrevealed in the past. And oftentimes, the gospel is referred to as the mystery of the gospel. That is because in the past, when the prophets spoke about the church and the gospel, they didn't understand all about it. They prophesied about it, but they didn't understand about it. The angels didn't understand all about this. But in the fullness of time, the gospel was revealed. And so today it's no longer a mystery, but it's referred to as the mystery of the faith, or the mystery of the gospel. And so what this is telling us is this is a man who holds to the gospel in a pure conscience. In other words, he is a man who is a sincere Christian. He lives with a pure conscience. He does it to the best of his ability. He does what he is convinced is right. He doesn't violate his conscience. He's not a compromiser with his own convictions. He's a person who lives his life each day in accordance with the Bible. And he can lay his head down on his pillow at night knowing, I've lived like I'm supposed to live. He's got a childlike faith before God. And he wants to go to heaven. He wants to please God. And he's very serious about that. Number 6, from verse 10. It says he must first be proved. Now, it's interesting to me that verse number 6 of this text says about an elder that an elder cannot be a novice. Now, the Greek word for novice means newly planted. And what that means is if a man is a new convert, he cannot be an elder. Now, about deacons, we actually have a similar statement here because the text says he must first be proved. As a matter of fact, the way it reads is this, and let these also first be proved. I believe what he is saying is this, as it is the case that elders have to be men who have been Christians for a period of time before they can be qualified, let the deacons also first be proved. Now the King James says prove, the New King James says tested. What does it mean that the man has to be tested? It simply means what we're talking about. Some time has transpired. He is not a young convert. He's not an inexperienced man. He's been a Christian long enough to study, to grow, long enough that we've been able to look at him and say he has a pattern of life that we know this man is faithful. Just through the years, we can tell this man faithful. You know, some people can fool you for a short period of time, but over time, their true colors have a way of coming out. This man's been a Christian long enough that we can say and we can see he's been proved. He's tested. He's a faithful man. Number 7. The text says he must be found blameless. Now, of course, the word blameless is also found in the qualifications of elders. And we talked about it a few months back. The word blameless obviously doesn't mean that he has to be sinlessly perfect. You know, 1 John 1 and verse 8 says, if we say that we have no sin, then we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. Jesus Christ was the only man who lived a sinlessly perfect life, Hebrews 4:15. And if we try to prevent a man from being a deacon or an elder because he's not sinlessly perfect, we're making a mistake. And we make an equally tragic mistake if we expect a man to become sinlessly perfect after he becomes a deacon. What does the Bible then mean when it says that a deacon must be blameless? The Greek word here literally means that which cannot be laid hold of. Linsky says the word blameless means of such a character that no one can rightfully take hold of the person with a charge of unfitness. David Lipscomb says, men whose character is unimpeachable, who stand in high public estimation, known for their life, a pure life and spotless integrity. And so what we're saying is this, it's a man that when they look at him, they think that's a godly man. He lives that way. Everybody knows that about him. There's nothing in his past or anything that's hiding that people look at and they may think, well, he's got that problem. And so if you've got a man who has a reputation for dishonesty, he's not qualified to be a deacon. If you've got a man who has humor that's you know, kind of tasteless humor, sexual drug, he's not qualified to be a deacon. If there's a man who's a womanizer, a man who forsakes the assembly, we could make a long list of things, but these men would not be qualified to be deacons. Number 8 from verse 11, it says, now this one's very interesting, listen to this. Their wives must be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things. Now, sometimes people have tried to dismiss this verse by saying, well, this doesn't have reference to the deacon's wives. It's just talking about women in general. But here's the thing about this. It's got to be deacon's wives because it is sandwiched between two other verses that both use the word deacon. And then it says, and it's talking about deacons, and then it says their wives must be this. Now, this is interesting to me because this is not stated about elders and about elders' wives. Now, why do you think that is? Why would this be said about deacons but not about elders? I don't know for sure. But maybe it's because A man who is an elder, to be qualified to be an elder, he must be a man who rules his house well. He must have his children in subjection with all gravity. Titus 1 says he's got faithful children. And so there's certain qualifications about his family that perhaps imply that his wife is faithful. She was all these things that his wife ought to be. And so maybe that's the reason. Now, on the other hand, when you think about a deacon doesn't have to have all the qualifications that an elder has, because he's not a shepherd of the flock. And so here is a man who is to be a deacon. And when we are looking at an individual and thinking, is this man qualified to be a deacon? We need to take particular, explicit, specific precautions about his wife. Even if he's faithful, you've got to check and make sure his wife is faithful. Now, why is that? A man might say, well, you know, you're asking me to be a deacon, not my wife. Why do you care if my wife is faithful? I want you to keep reading here and you'll see the answer to this. Look at verse 12. Let the deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their houses well. For they that have used the office of a deacon well purchase to themselves a good degree. Now, the American Standard says a good standing. I think perhaps this has reference to his standing in the community. And what he's talking about here very well may be the fact that when you appoint a man to the office of a deacon, immediately he becomes recognized in that community as a representative of the church in a way that's different from that of just a Christian. He's now a deacon. And if his wife isn't faithful and he's recognized as a representative of the church, it's going to reflect on the church. And so if his wife is a slanderer, now, you know what a slanderer is. It's somebody who goes around yah-yahing about people and gossiping about people, and they tear other people down to elevate themselves. If his wife is that way, then he's not qualified to be a deacon. She has to have a good reputation. She has to be grave. She has to be faithful. And so there may be a man who's a very godly man, but his wife might disqualify him because of this particular passage. Number 9, from verse 12, it says he must be the husband of one wife. Now, these five words tell us a lot. Number one, they tell us he must be a man, because a woman can't be the husband of one wife. Number two, they tell us that he must be a married man. And so when you're turning in your selection forms, don't write down the men, don't write down the names of any men who are not married, because they're not qualified. Thirdly, the idea that he is the husband of one wife means that he is not a polygamist. He has to have only one wife. Now, this would not preclude a man whose wife has died and he has remarried, because when his wife died, she ceased to be his wife, and when he remarried, he only has one wife. And likewise, if it would not preclude a man who has had a scriptural divorce, because God released him from that marriage when his wife committed adultery, and when he remarried, he only has one wife. And so that's not what he's talking about here. This has to do with polygamy. And in the modern society, I don't guess this is as relevant to us. I don't even know a person who's a polygamist. But in the first century, this would have been something that would have been pertinent for them to consider. Number 10, it says that he must be one who rules his children and his own house well. Now, from that, we learn first that a deacon must have children. So when you're filling in your selection sheets, don't turn in the names of a man who's married but doesn't have children. But here's a key distinction that I see between elders and deacons. We know that elders must rule their own house as well, just like it says about deacons. Verse 4 says the same thing about elders. But verse 5 says about elders that how they rule their house is a measure of how they will rule the church. But you see, deacons don't rule the church. Deacons are not overseers of the church. And Titus chapter 1 and verse 6 says, an elder must have faithful children. The root of that word faithful is the Greek word pistuo, which is where we get the word faith. And it's at the root of the word believe. And I believe that text means that he must have children who are believers, who are Christians, at least a child who is a Christian. But that's not said about a deacon. And so a deacon might have younger children. Maybe he's got children that haven't reached the age of accountability. Maybe they're 4 or 5 or 6 years old and they're not old enough to be Christians, but he has children. That would not prevent him from being qualified to serve as a deacon. But it still says that he must rule his own house well. And so if he has children that are 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 and they're belligerent and they don't obey him and they're trouble and they are bad-mouthing their dad and the family's always got problems going on, then you can't say this man's ruling his house well. And it would reflect on the church. And that man should not be installed as a deacon. You know, it's very interesting to me when you go down this list of qualifications, almost all of these qualifications apply to everybody. Most of them apply to everybody. Or they're qualifications that we should be seeking to have. Now, certainly you don't have to be married, you don't have to have children to be faithful to the Lord. But look at most of these characteristics are ones that every Christian should be working for anyway. All right, to summarize this very quickly. A deacon is a man who's serious about serious things. He's honest. He's not given to alcohol. He's not greedy. He's not all about money. He is living faithfully in a good conscience. He's not a new convert, but he has proven his love for the church by his faithful life. He doesn't have any accusations against him that could be substantiated. He has a faithful wife, and he has children, and he rules his house well. Now, I hope that you'll think about these.